You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the Westside Community News. And today, we finally, after a week and a half hiatus, returned to the player season preview series. We were almost done, and then were rudely interrupted by actual news and roster transactions and media day and practice. Unbelievable that the NBA calendar continued on its way without me. Anywho, today, we're talking about bench forwards. We have Tyrese Haliburton left after that on this player season preview series. Today, we'll talk about O'Shea Brissett, Terry Taylor, and Kendall Brown, the reserve forwards that we know will be on the Pacers roster this coming year. We'll do one more of these player season preview series for the final two-way guy and whoever makes the roster between James Johnson and Langston Galloway, whenever that's decided, whoever those players are. But for now, we will trudge on with the bench forwards that we know will be on the Pacers roster, as we do for these one segment for each of the three bench players, talking about various things. I don't want to run through the whole rubric because it will take up too much time, but lots of season preview content for these guys to know, you know, what to watch for their season from a statistical and skill standpoint, how important they are to the success of this team, things like that. We'll start right off with Terry Taylor, who had one of the most unique seasons ever last year, right? It's so wild to me looking at his basketball reference page, and this always just jumps off the page. You look at his per-game stats, and one of the things that Basketball Reference lists is their position. And for Terry Taylor, it says shooting guard. Like, if anyone watched the Pacers last year, they know that's not the case. And I put him in the bench forwards group because it made the most sense, but he played center almost the entire time he was playing, right? He is such a unique player, a 6'5" guy who has center skills, right? 2.9 offensive rebounds per game, and insanely strong 14.6% offensive rebound rate last season. Just putting in perspective how strong of an offensive rebound rate that was, right? Domantas Sabonis, a very, very skilled rebounder, one of the best in the league, 10.4%, right? Terry Taylor was destroying him there. Terry Taylor was the best, beat out guys like Tristan Thompson. You know, he was the best on the Pacers at it last year. It's remarkable how good he is as a second jumper and an anticipation rebounder for just 6'5". And that's what makes him such a unique player worth exploring, is that he's sort of a blank slate. You don't know what position he should play and how to figure out how to use that skill, but it's an elite rebounding skill at his height, and trying to tap into that potential will be fascinating this year. Basketball Reference kindly projects a bunch more offensive rebounds, 4.3 per 36 minutes this season. He was at 4.8 this past season. I don't know why it would go down. Seems like it would stay the same or go up a little bit as his, you know, as he figures out the NBA. He already seems more confident with media and in general. I imagine his rebounding numbers per minute will stay the same or go up from last year. And his scoring, Basketball Reference projects at 16.4 points per 36. It was at 16 last year. Yeah, same kind of deal. You know, I don't think that Terry Taylor's skills will evolve in a way that when he's in the game or whatever unit he's with, he'll be tasked with more scoring or given more per-minute opportunities to score. So I think suggesting that that stat stays the same. In fact, most of his stats, given the way he plays, right, he's not quite a self-creator yet. And I know he'll probably work on the jumper and have a little more range this year, but he's not an off-the-dribble guy. You know, he's mostly going to be set up by other guys. None of the stuff outside of better rebounding and game speed of game anticipation stuff seems like his stats will jump up or down significantly from last season. So I'm surprised Basketball Reference, you know, really goes off the path with that kind of stuff, given how his first season went. Like, having his field goal percentage going down doesn't make sense to me. It's not like he's going to be taking harder shots. You know, they do have his three-point percentage going way up, which is more interesting. Why, you know, if he's making more threes, I don't know why he would make less twos given what his shot diet would be. He is the most disagreeable stat projections of most players that I've done for this exercise so far, just because of the player he is, right? A lot of right around the basket, I just got the offensive rebound kind of shots, not a lot of, you know, threes off the dribble stuff. He's just going to be filling gaps and making plays for the rest of his team. What will Terry Taylor's role be this year? Great question. You know, that's how I like to, one of the big things I like to talk about with these guys is their role this year, and if anything could change about it. And I'm glad I'm recording this one when I did. It is currently 1 a.m. on the 28th, so one day after the first Pacers practice, when Rick Carlisle shared that the blue team, the second unit group for that first practice, had Terry Taylor on it, and Isaiah Jackson, and Aaron Nesmith and Benedict Mathurin and TJ McConnell. Notably not O'Shea Brissett. Fascinating stuff. And I understand why, you know, shout out to Scott McNeilis for floating me to this, but like Rick Carlisle likes Dwight Powell a lot. He likes those kind of centers who are, you know, going for it on the glass and good kind of screen and roll guys who, you know, do well in the paint and in crowds. And I think Terry Taylor fits that bill more than Brissett does. Now, granted, I think Brissett is the better player. I have long stated my affinity for the way O'Shea Brissett plays and how he can help the Pacers. But I understand why they would go with Terry Taylor. So we've had one day of practice. I am probably overthinking this, and this is coming out after practice number two. Things could completely change by then. But I think that Terry Taylor and O'Shea Brissett will be competing and kind of in the mix for that backup four spot, with O'Shea Brissett being more a little modern in terms of scale and Terry Taylor being more unique. Not that one is better than the other. It's just sort of how it is. So we'll see what ends up happening with Terry Taylor there. But backup four could be coming for him, and I'll be curious how he fits next to another big with his rebounding skills. Biggest question about Terry Taylor's season: how does he fill in more gaps? Right now, the gaps he fills in: best rebounder on the team, for sure, decent screener, but kind of an awkward fit in some certain places. Like if he's a center and he's 6'5", he's going to struggle guarding his guy sometimes, right? That's not a knock on his skills. It's just a knock on his height. It is what it is, you know? And he's not quite mobile enough to switch onto guards all the time, right? What other gaps can he fill? And that's sort of like saying, what skills can he add? But as a gap filler, I felt like that was more appropriate, right? Will he become a better screener in a way that even at 6'5", they're comfortable saying, yep, you got this. Screen, do a short roll, make a play. Will he become a better shooter to the point that off of screens he can pop out? Now, granted, that gets him away from the rim where he provides his most value as an offensive rebounder, but it's still valuable to add a three-point shot, or at least some range. Practice number one saw him working on jumper and technique and things like that with assistant coach Jenny Buschek, right? Maybe that's something he can add to his game to fill more gaps. Maybe he can be a good cutter, right? There's a lot of things he can add. There's a lot of things every player can add. But his specifically, given that he is such a unique utility, is so fascinating to me. How can he, not that he needs to become a more traditional player, but just adding some of the skills that would allow him to be more than, you know, clean it up plays all the time would be really big for him. So I'll be curious to see that all season, right? What does he add that allows him to be valuable in other areas? And that's why looking at stats to monitor for him, same sort of thing. Basically every stat except for rebounding. You know, I just said at the top that I project a lot of them will stay the same or go down from rookie season, more likely stay the same for almost all of them. That's not a bad thing. I just think that's how it's going to be. But if any of them jump significantly, like if he's a better shooter, if he's a better finisher, if his steals go up or something like that, that suggests he's reading the game better, he's getting to his spots better, he's finishing plays more efficiently, all sorts of random things. And he kind of fits the bucket of a lot of these young guys where you're just hoping to see skill development and statistical development. You know, any stat except for rebounding, where it's already very clear, especially for his height, you know, maybe one of the best rebounders like ever for his height in the league. You know, how can he add to that this year in the statistical ways? I'll be curious to see that because, you know, there are a lot of things. But if I just had to narrow it down to one, most important stat to monitor, three-point percentage, right? This dude, if Terry Taylor can shoot 34%, 35% from deep, what a talent that would be. I mean, that's a guy that can spread the floor, and then the second the shot goes up, he dives in, and he's a threat to grab the rebound at any time. So I'll be very curious to see what he can add to his game and what sort of stats and questions he can answer. Another question I like to ask for all these season previews: how important is this player to the success of the team this season? You know, for all these bench forwards, I would say not super important. I'll say the same for O'Shea and Kendall Brown. You know, I think having power forwards is a moderately important position in terms of who you end up defending a lot of the time in the NBA and how you can be a good connecting piece, especially the best ones on valuable teams. But if he can be a shooter, that's important. If he can carve out a role as the backup four, that's important, but not more important than a lot of guys. I think he's important on the development rubric for the Pacers, but not necessarily the wins and losses one. Not that it's a bad thing. You know, there's just more important guys on that front, but I think him getting better at his age, I believe he just turned 23, yes, 6 days ago, which is great. You know, that's still a great young age, but, you know, adding to his game at that age is still going to be valuable for Terry Taylor at this stage of his career. And are they angling for a spot on the Pacers long term? How important are they to the long term success of the Pacers? Well, naturally, you have to say Terry Taylor is sort of angling for a spot on the Pacers long term. He is, after all, on an expiring contract, right? This is the last year of his current deal. But The Pacers can make him a restricted free agent after this season. If they like him enough to plan, again, we have one day of practice I am basing this statement off of. This is not a Sharpie, pen, whatever, write it down thing. This is just one day of observation. But either way, if they already view him as the backup four, it seems like they would like to keep him around after this year. So I don't think he's angling for a spot, but like with a lot of guys, he's angling for a specific role. Can he hold on to the backup four spot? Can he outplay O'Shea Brissett? Can he outplay some other guys and maybe get some minutes at the five where he looked very natural last season? Can he shoot well enough that can he even play the three a little bit? He's only 6'5". That's not that crazy. You know, a lot of stuff for him is not about if he plays well, I think the Pacers will try to keep him. You know, they're clearly already potentially viewing him as a rotation guy. But what role makes the most sense for him? Can he gain more minutes or more role, more opportunity, whatever? That's what I think he's angling for more going forward. So Terry Taylor, fascinating season coming up, and that's mostly because he's a fascinating player, unique skill set, something I've never seen before. It's rare that I ask a ton of coaches about a player, and I'm asking not necessarily like, what do you think of this guy? It's more like, have you ever seen a guy at this height be this good at this skill? It's fascinating, and he'll be super fun to cover this year. Let's move on to Bench four, both of those are true. Number two, Mr. O'Shea Brissett. Before we do that, though, gotta talk to you guys about betonline.net, the fastest and easiest way to check in on all of your favorite sports. You can find all the latest sports developments, league news, podcasts, whatever info you need, and more all over at betonline.net, the easiest way to keep up with all the latest in football news. For example, Colts, Titans this weekend. Colts are favored at home after their big win over the Chiefs. My Hoosiers not looking good against the Cornhuskers this weekend, and BetOnline's got all those odds and more. Team matchups, news, podcasts, in-depth articles, they've got it all. The fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite games and events, BetOnline.net. They've got MMA, boxing, MLB, golf, obviously football, and NBA starting so soon this weekend with preseason action. Head to BetOnline.net or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in the action, because BetOnline is where the game starts. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, why not hop on over to Locked On Celtics, hear about what's going on with that team and their coaching change. Malcolm Brogdon apparently given a choice of what team to be traded to. They might hire a different assistant coach. A lot going on. John Corrales will have it all for you at Locked On Celtics. We're here talking about the Pacers, though, and none other than O'Shea Brissett, one of the most interesting players on the Pacers, because I didn't realize this until this offseason, sort of a divide in perception about his talent level. I thought most were at least understanding that he's a quality defender and was a good shooter for most of his time with the Pacers, and that in itself, just those two skills alone, mean you're a pretty valuable player, but a lot of people think that he's kind of a lower impact guy, and I get it. He's one of the few guys that totally tricks me, because when I watch him, I find him to be very impactful. I think he's doing a lot of things that help a team win in terms of timeliness and resourcefulness and effectiveness and just generally important skills. But his advanced stats aren't very good, right? And that is so interesting to me. Usually, I do pretty well at matching those things up. He really breaks it. Negative on offense and defense, according to Basketball Reference's BPM this past season, which generally does a pretty good job matching what I'm seeing. So that's always interesting with Brissett, and we'll see what his next season can carry about. What does his, speaking of Basketball Reference, what do they say his stats look like they're going to be this year? 14.7 points per 36 minutes. That would be higher than last season, which I think makes a little bit of sense. We'll talk about why in a second. 8.2 rebounds per 36 minutes. That would be a career best. Interesting to note there. It depends on who he plays with. We'll talk about that in a second as well. And 36.6% from deep, 43.2% from the field. So what I'm seeing here for their projections, and again, they do it a lot of based on an algorithm of like age and position and years in the league and things like that. And for O'Shea, they are projecting a jump in three-point percentage over last year, which makes sense. He shot 42% 2 years ago with the Pacers on almost identical volume, and a bump in field goal percentage, which basically if his three-point percentage goes up, so will his field goal percentage. Like, those make sense to me. And I would guess, you know, this guy's 36% for his career from deep. He settles in about there. He's at, so far for his career, about 330 attempts. So he's close to what his career average is going to be. But I think that a lot of what lineup he's in is going to drive what his stats can be. Like, I think he'll have more opportunities to score in some of the Pacers second units, but it depends who he's with, right? If he's playing with TJ McConnell and Chris Duarte, You know, he might get more cutting opportunities on a spaced floor, but if he's playing with Benedict Mathurin, Mathurin will have the ball more but isn't as good of a creator. He might not get as many touches in that way. So the lineup he's with might drive a lot of the context of how well he's playing, how well he's putting the ball in the basket, what he exactly is needed to do. And that's similar on the rebounding front, right? Like if he's playing with Miles a lot, he might be asked to rebound more. If he's playing with Terry Taylor, he will not be asked to. Isaiah Jackson, kind of TBD, right? So I think a lot of his stats can go up just contextually. The second unit will help him out in that way. He added a little bit of handle last year. He's a great cutter, you know, but can he emphasize those things with the second units that the Pacers project to have? We'll see. And that's the next question, his role. Will he even be on the Pacers second unit? Because, again, practice one wasn't with the unit that was described to us. And if you look at the videos, you know, that the Pacers put on social media, you can kind of see who's in what group based on their jersey color. And O'Shea Brissett's team was him, James Johnson, Langston Galloway, Andrew Nembhard, and Kendall Brown. You know, that's clearly like the third team, for example. And this happened last year with Brissett. He wasn't playing early in the season. Torrey Craig was playing more. Justin Holiday was playing more, right? And I don't know. You know, I asked Carlisle about it quite a bit, and then eventually O'Shea ended up playing more games than anyone on the team. And we'll see what happens this year. Maybe he does start there in the rotation. Carlisle talked about a big expanded rotation, though. Maybe he can play. Who knows? You know, there's a lot of this stuff still up in the air. But it looks like right now, I would say that even if they go 10 men, O'Shea would be the best guy who doesn't play. So I think he should be the backup four. If I were in charge of any sort of rotation decisions, I think I would play O'Shea Brissett. But I understand exploring the uniqueness and talents of Terry Taylor and why Terry Taylor there might be a guy that Rick Carlisle in particular likes playing. So we'll see what ends up happening with Brissett's role. I think he could, like the opposite of Terry Taylor essentially, kind of go up and down in terms of what he's playing and what his role is and stuff like that. But it seems like a 36-37% three-point shooter who's a good defender should be playing on a young team that's trying to develop. But that said, you know, the team did not look to make his contract longer this offseason. When they had that opportunity with his team option to send him in restricted free agency, they did not do that, right? So it's going to be interesting to see what that means for him this year, right? What do their actions say about him? Well, if they make him an expiring contract and then don't put him in the rotation, maybe they're not as high on him as it was once perceived for his future. So we will see where he ends up on this team. Biggest question about his year, can he recapture the efficiency he had in year one with the Pacers would be the biggest offensive question to me, right? And he went contextualizing what he did in year one and two with the Pacers is fascinating, because in year one, he was playing next to the LeVert engine, right? That was when LeVert was running the show on offense, and it was just LeVert, Sabonis, and whoever they could get open. But he had the easiest threes ever. He only took 78 because he joined the team late that season with the Pacers, but they were all like wide open, and a lot of them were from the corner, right? And so he, credit to O'Shea Brissett, he was making those shots, but they were like the easiest threes. 52% of his threes were corner threes in his first season with the Pacers. That number fell to 37 last year. So he had a lot of very easy threes, and when he shot 42% in year one with the Pacers, last year 35%. Can they get him more of those shots that he is good at, you know, more often? And Halliburton's a great creator. Who knows how often they'll be playing together? McConnell can create. Other than that, it might be a little harder. So I'll be curious how the Pacers try to make his life easier and get him those easy shots. And the other question is, can he add to his defense in an on-ball setting, right? Like, he's a decent on-ball defender and decent team defender, but if he can be just a little bulkier and better on-ball, he might be the team's best option to throw out some of these bigger, more powerful wings that they've struggled with for years and years and years. So important to watch him in that way. Growth as well. Two key skills. He's a decent shooter and decent defender. Becoming really good at one or the other would be valuable. So a key stat to watch, obviously true shooting percentage, right? Well over 60 his first season with the Pacers. Finished well at the rim, shot well from deep. That did not happen this past season, right? His at-the-rim percentage dropped from 73 to 58. The three-point percentage dropped. If he can get those numbers back up, that'd be great. And especially that at-rim percentage as he tightens the handle, as he cuts more on a team with Tyrese Halliburton and McConnell, finishing there will be key. How important is O'Shea Brissett to the success of the Pacers this year? You know, if he ends up being their best 3-and-D threat, kind of important. But if he's not in the rotation that much, not that important. So as their best forward defender, right now, it looks like moderately important, but, you know, not too much more or less than Terry Taylor, for example, especially if only one of them is playing in a given game. So, you know, bench players just in general, especially on teams that project to win somewhere between 25 and 30 games, not the most important to a team's success, but the utility of O'Shea Brissett could lend him to being a little more valuable than the typical bench player. And like I said, in Terry Taylor and Jalen Smith season previews, the forward position is important. The Pacers have had some struggles with getting the right talent there for the last couple of years. Perhaps Brissett could prove to be important. And is O'Shea Brissett angling for a spot on the Pacers long term? How important is he to the long term success? Well, similar to Terry Taylor, he's on an expiring contract. And so, yeah, he is in theory angling for a spot on the Pacers long term. Now, Terry Taylor, restricted free agent next offseason. O'Shea Brissett, unrestricted. He has the option to pick his next team. So is he angling it for a spot on the Pacers long term? Not really. I mean, he becomes extension eligible with like a month left in the season, which is sort of valueless. But, I don't think that he's really angling for a spot. It's kind of up to him. If he plays really well, he might play himself. The Pacers will have every means to keep him, but he'll have the options to go to other teams. It'll be fascinating to see how that works. But like with a lot of these young guys, he's more playing for a role, right? Can he find that backup four role? Can he get any minutes at the three? Things like that are what he's angling for more than a spot on this team. But if Terry Taylor outplays him, for example, he might get played off the team. There's a lot of conflicting things about where the backup four spot's going. Maybe I'm putting too much stock in one practice, but I think both of those guys are kind of fighting for minutes for a role. Maybe not for a spot on the Pacers. They're both valuable and young, but those kind of things will be key. So lots to look out for in Brissett's third season with the Pacers, and I've enjoyed his story so far. And we'll, of course, be watching it this coming season. One more bench forward to talk about today. Kendall Brown, the second round pick, the 48th overall pick, the two-way contract recipient. I put off this episode, this season preview, because Kendall Brown was not signed yet, and then he got signed, and then a bunch of other stuff happened, and I couldn't even get this episode out. So finally, we could talk about Kendall Brown's upcoming season. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, hop on over to Locked On Bucks. The Bucks are going on an overseas tour for the preseason. Cade Pittman breaking down the latest on Giannis. The Bucks title hopeful this year, and everything going on with that division rival for the Pacers. Kendall Brown time, exciting player. I have no idea what to expect from him from a holistic perspective because he's raw. And I think that is sort of the toughest guys to preview a season for. Kendall Brown, crazy athlete, insane athlete. If Isaiah Jackson wasn't on the Pacers, he would be by far the most athletic Pacer. But he's not even the most athletic Pacer because of Isaiah Jackson. But still, Kendall Brown, probably the fastest Pacer, can still really jump, adding skills to his game. Naturally gifted basketball player. Does that mean anything at the NBA level, right? Can that translate to more? TBD, right? So looking at his stats, the Basketball Reference doesn't do projections for rookies, so a little tougher to gauge. Looking at past 48th pick Sharif Cooper last year, played in 13 games for the Hawks, ended up averaging half a point per game and half a rebound on a per 36 basis. He averaged 6.5 points and 4.6 assists. The year before, Nico Mannion played in 30 games for the Warriors, 4.1 points, 2.3 assists per game, or 12.2 points and 4.5 rebounds, 6.9 assists per 36. So really impossible to get a read on either of those guys. They play different positions than Kendall Brown, but it looks like his scoring would settle in about 10 points per 36. In general, inefficient. And will be trying to get rebounds and try to make his impact in other ways. It's hard to be a rookie in the NBA already. I tend to think that rookies are bad. But there are ways they can be useful in terms of defense and adding other skills that way. What's more valuable is looking at G League stats, G League performances, because Nico Mannion, the 48th pick by Golden State, was awesome for the Santa Cruz Warriors, right? 19.3 points, 7 assists per game, shot it well from deep, was good at getting to the basket and scoring. Sharif Cooper, my draft crush last year, 17 points and 7 rebounds per game in the regular season for the College Park Skyhawks, coached by former Mannion's head coach as well, which is fascinating. So, right, can Kendall Brown put up good stats in the G League? That will be more important. Is he dominating guys who he's supposed to dominate? That's where he will be able to be watched more from a statistical perspective. So what's his likely role this year? Not much. Two-way guys shouldn't play very often. Now, that's funny to talk about because, ironically, the Pacers had a ton of two-way minutes last year. Terry Taylor played a bunch. Dejan Giroux appeared in a game. Dwayne Washington played a bunch. Gabe York appeared in a bunch of games down the stretch. Historically, between like Sumner and Alex Poitras, they've actually used their two-way guys more often than other teams, but that shouldn't happen. It's just sort of been forced to happen for the Pacers with injuries in their team context. In theory, like Sharif Cooper played 13 games for the Hawks last year. Like, that's what makes sense for two-way guys. They play a lot more often at the beginning of the season because the G League hasn't started yet, and at the end of the season when the G League is over. In the middle, not as much, unless there's injuries and depth is needed, right? So 10 to 15 games with the NBA team makes the most sense, but we'll see. I think Kendall Brown, a lot of the work he'll do in terms of growth and development will come with the Madden. So his role with the Pacers, mostly garbage time and injury moments. Last season, I think, was more of the anomaly, especially because those two-way guys both proved to be NBA talents. We will see what happens there. With the Mad Ants, he should start every game. He's with them because he's a very raw player, right? And that's sort of my big question about his season. Can he shed that raw label? And raw doesn't mean bad. You know, I think it's very important to shed those differences. You know, Kendall Brown was a good player at Baylor. I really liked him. I graded him as a first-round talent. He's really fast, and he's got good handle of the ball when he's running fast, which is really hard. And he's okay at some stuff. But can he add a shot? Can he add a two-dribble move to score? Can he be a really good rebounder? Can he defend the ball really well? If he can do shooting or defending, well, I always talk about this with forwards. If you're a forward, you can do one or the other, just one at an NBA level. Bam, NBA player, rotation player, right? So just getting good at one of those things would be huge. It would shed the raw label. He could prove this guy's not just an athletic freak. He can also defend like crazy. Or this guy's not just an athletic freak. He's a good shooter. Or this guy's not just an athletic freak. He's a great cutter and finisher at the basket, right? Adding one of those skills to shed the raw label will be huge for him. And that's the case for a lot of two-way players and guys who slide to 48, but the Pacers really wanted him. You know, Kevin Pritchard said on Sideline Guys that they were trying to get him from picks 32 to whenever they got him, 48, right? So they wanted to get him right after they got Andrew Nembhard. But now they have to show what that looks like. What we wanted this guy now. How do we develop him? Things like that. And so the most important stats to monitor will be anything that suggests he is shedding that label. I typed a million, and I've been so bad about this, right? I typed most important stat to monitor singular, and then I just type 100 things. So I suppose it shouldn't be singular. I type scoring, passing, rebounding, defense, on, off, right? Like, if he's scoring well, that especially the G League level, that suggests, you know, he can hang in the NBA. Justin Anderson proved that last year. If the Mad Ants defense, which uses similar schemes to the Pacers, because Pacers assistant coach Tom Hankins is the Mad Ants head coach, you know, if he's doing really well in that way, that suggests he can hang in the Pacers scheme, or if he's rebounding like crazy or finds a way to be a creator, you know, all these things that suggest, yeah, he's got skill. He's helping this team win. That would be huge for his outlook and development. Really anything that says Kendall Brown is good at blank, maybe at the NBA level, maybe the G League level, but anything that can fill in that sentence beyond what I said earlier, the raw label, shedding that label, would be huge for him statistically and from a skill growth perspective. How important is Kendall Brown to the success of the Pacers this season? Of everybody I'm going to do a season preview for, probably the least most important. maybe another two-way guy will be less important. And under the label of success for the Pacers this year being wins and losses, not important at all, right? He will not be guiding them to wins. He will not be the guy exploding to take the Pacers team, you know, to a playoff level of wins or 40 wins or anything like that. Now, from the rubric of growth being important for the Pacers and success this season, yeah, Kendall Brown's growth is important, as is every young player's, but it's not like more so than a lot of other guys in a way that I would say, you know, he has a ton of him. If he has a bad season of development, no one's going to be like, oh, the Pacers failed this year. Kendall Brown didn't get any better, you know? So under both rubrics, he's not the most important. That doesn't mean he's not an important player. They did just draft him and trade stuff to get him, right? They clearly have some level of investment in him being good. And it would be great if he was good enough to play on the NBA roster and showed a ton of growth over the season, but he's got to do those things. So he does have some importance, excuse me. I'm tripping over my words. It's 1:30 in the morning, but I would say one of the least important guys for the success of the team this year, not that he's not an important player, if that differentiation makes any sense. Is he angling for a spot in the Pacers long term? Hey, like every forward on this, yes, absolutely. We've seen how hard it can be to get the promotion from the two-way. Dwayne Washington got it and then still couldn't make the Pacers roster this year, right? Like, it's tough. Ben Moore got the promotion. He got cut in like 3 days with the Pacers a couple years ago, right? It's hard to earn the promotion from a two-way and prove to be a good player. It's hard. You got to ball in the G League. You got to bust your butt with the pro club. It's really hard. And by default, a one-year two-way contract means he's on an expiring contract. He's a free agent next summer. So he's got to prove it this year to get on to the Pacers next year, right? That's a lot. So, yeah, he's angling for a spot in the Pacers long term, not just a role, a spot on the team, whether that's another two-way. You know, Cassius Stanley couldn't even get the second two-way. He didn't sign the qualifying offer, and they pulled it. You know, it's hard. So Kendall Brown, yeah, he's absolutely angling for a spot on the Pacers next year. He's got to play well or show some of the stuff we talked about earlier, some skills to shed the raw label or anything that says, yes, he can do this if he checks into an NBA game and he's in the rotation, not on a two-way, in the future. Let me know if you think I missed anything with these guys. Fascinating group of bench forwards, both because they have a strange hierarchy, they have unique skill sets, and they're all on expiring contracts. That's crazy for the future of the Pacers that all of their bench forwards and three actually natural forwards are on expiring deals. This team does not have a lot of forwards, so something they'll certainly have to address and think about as this season progresses and the next offseason comes. Let me know what you think about this on Twitter at TEastNBA or at Locked On Pacers for the podcast. And this is on YouTube now. If you comment down there, that's super good for the YouTube algorithm. Subscribe on there if you're not. That's really helpful for me. I'm out of town all weekend, so I'm pre-recording some episodes. I don't know what tomorrow is. It should be a mailbag. But if some news drops and I have to record something else, I have to record something else. So as of now, I will say tomorrow should be a mailbag. But the questions have already been asked, so don't bother asking if you missed the timing for that. Either way, thank you guys a ton for listening. Have a great rest of your day. We will see you tomorrow.